from the Atlantic to the Pacific, across the islands of the Caribbean, from mountain crest to mountain crest, from canyons to the clouds and into the cosmos, we are pumping wattage high and low, plus streaming worldwide on the internet and keeping you company tonight. It's the place to relax and hang out. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren, and this is Speaking of Strange, presented by Wright's Coin Shop, giving you the latest and discussing the weirdest. We have assembled the finest team of reporters and the most intriguing guests, and that's why we are your favorite hub in a wild world. So keep it tuned right here. And boy, have I been looking forward to this hour tonight. If you missed a last hour of the program, well, you know, a good friend of mine who is known certainly all over the country and I'm sure all over the world, he is a fella who has devoted his life to being able to read for himself as accurately as possible the ancient sources that take us back to how things were initially recorded during the biblical times. He actually has learned Aramaic, and who knows how much he knows of other languages. And in doing so, he has cut through all of these sort of self-centered abuses, really, of translation that kings and tyrants and governments have done all throughout the years to try to get as close to possible to what they actually were trying to tell us when the authors of the Bible, for example, recorded these amazing words. It's hard to really describe not only his work, but also how he has sort of breathed new life into some of these ancient rituals. I mean, he and I did a program at AB Tech years ago, and part of that program included a water ritual that was sort of based on the things that, say, John the Baptist would have done in his time. And people were just, you know, mesmerized. They were laughing. They were outside themselves. Some were crying. They were just having profound personal experiences. And when you hear his words and what he has discovered about what was meant for us to learn, it can have a big impact. His name is Dale Allen Hoffman. His website is daleallenhoffman.com, and that first name is spelled D-A-L-E, second name A-L-L-E-N, and the last name H-O-F-F-M-A-N. We're going to have it linked up for you at speakingofstrange.com. Dale, welcome back to Speaking of Strange.
It's great to hear your voice. It's been a while. I'm not sure how many years, maybe 6 or 7 years since I've been on here.
That is incredible, isn't it?
This is our year, man. I mean, I really feel like 2015, and I don't just mean you and me. I just worldwide, dimension-wide, it's almost like we've been stocking up and putting so much into sort of the cosmic piggy bank, and I really feel it's like a deep knowing that this is the year that we're, you know, meant to start collecting. Not in some sort of preordained sense, but you can feel it. You can sense it. So it's great to be on the show.
Well, thank you. And I recently posted on my Facebook page my sort of take on 2015, just from what I've been seeing happen around me to people I know. It reminds me of a line from one of my favorite movies based on the Stephen King novel Needful Things. And the line is, everybody who's got it coming is going to get it now. Mm. So it's some kind of a, I don't know, it's the culmination of some kind of a cycle. And hopefully it will be good for many of us, just as it will be bad for many people as well. But, you know, I've had trouble summarizing exactly who you are and what you do, Dale. So just, you know, tell everybody out there, you know, where were you born and what path did you take to lead you to where you are right now?
It's funny that you say hard summarizing it because we've probably spent 10 years trying to write a bio of what I do. It's difficult to get that into words. I was born in New Jersey, South Jersey, like basically right across the river from Philadelphia, and I grew up in a pretty small farm town that's now basically just a suburb, but my grandmother was a pillar, you could say, in the local Methodist church. She was that kind of woman that she would take me and my sister and brother and I to church, and then she would go for two or three more carloads to pick more kids up. And I mean, I was there. I was never against church. Fortunately, it was Methodist, which means I didn't have a lot of guilt and shame thrown at me. But I don't know, just being young, it just felt, something always felt off. And if I would ask a minister or one of the Sunday school teachers, they would basically tell me anything I didn't understand, take it on faith. And I'd be like, okay, what's faith? Well, you got to take that on faith too. Nobody ever had the questions, you know, the answers to the questions. But I distinctly remember being 7 years old, and not something that most seven-year-olds do. I sat down on the floor in my grandmother's living room, and I pulled out five different Bibles, the original 1611 King James, the New King James. I don't remember what the other three were. And I remember opening to Jesus' Beatitudes, which I was kind of fascinated with, and comparing the five Bibles, and my jaw hit the floor even at the age of seven, because I was like, not only were they contextually slightly different, they were actually saying completely different things for the exact same verses. And what I started doing was reading the beginning of the Bibles, talking about how things were translated, and oops, we may have made mistakes, but hopefully God will overlook that, some outside God, whatever. And this stuff just kind of kept germinating. And then when I was 14, I started kind of riffing on the words of Jesus. I would write down some of the lines of his teachings, and I would just write down what I felt it really meant. And I would write pages and pages and pages that nobody ever wrote or ever read, just me. It's like I just had to write it. And then when I was 21, I started hearing about the Aramaic language, which was the language that in that region, it was the lingua franca. It was the language that Yeshua would have spoken if he was from Judea. And I dug straight into that. When I was 28, I started teaching a lot of those insights from Aramaic publicly. When I was 35, I started doing it full-time. Now I'm 42, and my first book's coming out in May. So for some reason, it's been in sevens. But even in studying the language, I realized it wasn't about the language. It was almost like there was a matrix or a frame of some kind that in order to really comprehend what was going on, I had to pull back far enough, kind of like a Monet painting or Georges Seurat, where if you come in too close on pointillism, it just looks like a big hodgepodge of dots if you get too deep into the details. But it's kind of learning what you need to learn, and almost like in a scientific sense, but then pulling back far enough to be able to see the big picture. And that's when it all started hitting for me, when I started studying Gnosticism and putting a lot of the stuff into practice. It was like, whoa, this stuff isn't nearly as, I should say, coded or secret or uneasy to understand if you just pull back and allow yourself to be open. And I was ostracized, you know, in the language community because I was talking about feeling things and being experiential, but then I'm also talking about the science of it. And it was like I've never had an interest in being indoctrinated. I'd never wanted to go to a theological seminary. That's fine for people if they want it. I wasn't interested in being given frames or fences. I just was interested in letting wherever this was going to take me, take me. But what that was for 10, 15 years, it made it real difficult because not many people took me seriously because I was never in the room I was supposed to be in. But then all of a sudden when I came through that, something really unique was pouring through me, and I basically just ran with it. So
now historians have always questioned whether or not Jesus as a literal man even existed. And of course, therefore, we can at least talk about him as the character of Jesus. What is your opinion on who this man potentially was?
It's funny because when people ask me questions, like sometimes people ask me questions like, was he in India? Was, you know, Mary Magdalene in France? All these kinds of things. And my response to a lot of the historical Jesus stuff is that it's basically a loaded question in a way. To put it bluntly, well, I've spent my entire life deep in this research, reading everything I could possibly get my hands on, studying, reading the same books three or four times, studying, reading atheist material, historical stuff, Christian stuff, Jesus was an alien, Jesus was a walk-in, whatever it may be. And to be completely honest, I'm at the point where right now I just think I'm open and somehow in the center. I'm very I know one thing. If he was an actual historical person, then we've got a major dilemma on our hands, because there is literally zero documentation outside of the Bible or five historians, one of which was a forgery, three of which don't talk about Jesus specifically, but simply about Christos, which is just a label meaning channel of God, and one which simply talked of some kind of Messiah amongst the Jews. The only one that was actually accurate talking about a specific Jesus of Nazareth was Josephus, who had been proven to be a forgery hundreds of years ago. So we've got this problem, like, in some ways, I think, like, hey, was this actually a historical guy? Was this a conglomeration? Was this some kind of entity that channeled something through one or more people? And I've been at the point for maybe 10 years now where I'm sort of just on the fence on that, because I notice that when I fall into yes, he was, or no, he wasn't, I tend not to be open, and then whatever it is that I'm looking for, just like law of attraction, as soon as I lock myself into, like, okay, this is what it is, everything seems to move into the frame or a matrix around whatever my beliefs are, and I tend to not see something that might not fit into that anymore. So I'm doing my best to stay open, and honestly, I don't know. I mean, I really, truly don't know. I do know that whatever it is in these teachings, wherever they came from, especially those ancient Aramaic ones, wow. I mean, there's some really deep, profound things that most modern people, especially, I would say, in evangelical Christians, may have never even, they wouldn't, if they heard a lot of what the meanings were, they would literally say, oh, well, it can't be that. So, powerful stuff, though.
We have about a minute before our first break, and speaking of, you know, this identity, this profile of a person named Jesus, I saw somebody posted on the internet the other day, the next time somebody says, what would Jesus do? Well, remember, turning over tables and beating people's ass with a whip is not out of the question. And little things like that are meant to sort of, like, point out that a lot of people have this idea about what it would be like to hang out with this guy. From all the resources that you've read, whether or not those sources are fictional, would you say, and again, we only have about 30 seconds, would you say there is a particular consistent personality applied to this guy, or is it all over the place?
I think so. The core, yeah, I definitely see that. It's a great question. But then if you go out into the extremities, into the Gnostic stuff and a lot of the junk that was written by the Catholic Church, whatever, then it gets a little more hazy the further away you go. Yeah, I really feel that, but as far as an actual person, I don't know. I don't know, but it does feel very cohesive.
Okay, folks, when we come back, I will ask Dell to tell us, given his experience close to the source, some of the things that the Bible claims that Jesus wanted us to know that would sort of shock you because it's been misinterpreted so much. I'm Joshua P. Warren, talking with Dale Allen Hoffman. Tonight's show is brought to you by Wright's Coin Shop. This is Speaking of Strange.
A smile from a veil. Do you think you can tell?
Presented by Wright's Coin Shop, and you may call Wright's Coin Shop, and I hope you will, at 828-298-5402, 828-298-5402. 5402, or if you go to speakingofstrange.com, you will find a live chat during the show. You'll find a link to Wright's Coin Shop, and you will find a link to my guest's website, DaleAllenHoffman.com. That's DaleAllenHoffman, DaleAllenHoffman.com. And he is an expert at properly interpreting ancient languages, particularly Aramaic, the language that Jesus spoke. And so, Dale, tell us, when you have the ability to sit down as a person that, at very least, I know and trust, and read with your knowledge some of the sources that are as close as possible to the words that Jesus was saying, what can you tell us that would surprise most people about his real message? What did he want us to know?
You know, I don't know that it's a surprise to people as much today, in this day and age. Maybe in the 50s it would be more of a surprise, or sort of to a standard Christian. But the thing that strikes me the most is that everything he's speaking of consistently, he's constantly talking about to give a quote from St. Francis of Assisi, what you're looking for is what is looking. Everything that Yeshua was speaking about was constantly saying, everything that you seek is inside of you. The love, the peace, the presence, the essence, whatever it is that you're seeking is literally something that is almost like threaded into or embedded into your own awareness. And like as an example, when you hear all these quotes, it's one of the things that people hang up on from the Gospel of John when it says, I am the way and the truth and the life, or I am the bread of life. What's really intriguing is that if you look in Koine Greek, which was supposedly the first written version of the Bible, although we don't have any originals, we have zero original texts of the Bible, none, zilch, nada. When you look in Koine Greek, it says, I am, as in I, Jesus, I, Yeshua. What's really intriguing in that case, though, all of those I am phrases, what Yeshua was actually saying was one word twice. The word was Ina. Now, Ina or Ana, if you say it once, it means I, Dale, in other words. If I say Ana Lachma Dahai, I, Dale, am Lachma, bread of Dahai, life. I am the bread of life. But what's intriguing is that in those Yeshua phrases, what it actually says is Ana, Ana, or Ina, Ina. Now, what's interesting about that is that doesn't mean I as in me, a person. It doesn't mean I. What it actually means is the I within the I, or the I inside of the I. Not eyeball inside of eyeball, but awareness within awareness. He's literally saying that's the light of the world, that's the bread of life, etc. But unfortunately, when we look, focus on some kind of an outside person, even though he told us not to do that, it becomes more about something that he did rather than our own potentiality, which is funny because in order to do that, we have to push certain things off the table. Like when he says, you can do all that I have done and even greater things. If he's the only son of God, which is an ancient, archetype that goes back for thousands and thousands of years into numerous cultures, if he's the only begotten son, if that's what that actually meant, of course we can't do that. Well, then that doesn't line up with him saying, you can do all that I've done and even greater things. But that eye within the eye, I know that for me, it was one of the most earth-shattering, or should I say reality-shattering or mask-shattering realizations that I ever had. And it's right there. It's not something that you've got to have a deep study of Aramaic. You just look on the page, there it is. It was very intriguing to me because in the last couple thousand years, it's become all about him. And it's almost like everything's been flipped 180 degrees perfectly opposite. Almost perfectly opposite. So that was definitely something that dropped me.
And so basically what you're saying is, ironically, Jesus was not saying, literally worship me, the man, worship the spirit that is within me that is also within all of you. Is that one way of saying it?
Ding, 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 right on the head. That's exactly it. And that's the key. One of the things if we realize, like as an example, we have this modern Western, especially American Christian idea of God as some kind of an outside thing, but that word God in Aramaic, Allah, literally means absolute only being. In other words, God isn't a thing. God's not some kind of awareness that has control over us, whatever it may be. He doesn't have a long white beard sitting up in the clouds or on another moon or something. God literally means everything contained in one singularity. All of creation, manifest and non-manifest, conscious, unconscious, light, dark, positive, negative. God is the whole. God's the entirety. And the more open we can be, the more still we can be in those deeper places within our awareness, the more in touch we are with that wholeness, with that entirety. So if we don't understand that, we'll never, ever, ever be able to understand or apply anything that he said, because there's such an obsession with some kind of an outside God or power, which is exactly the opposite of what he was talking about. He was, in the words of the Buddha said the finger is not the moon. It could have just as much come out of Yeshua's mouth as well. So,
and so would you think then that if he is looking down, so to speak, on us right now, that he's just rolling his eyes and he's got his hand on his forehead saying, man, they still didn't get it, you know, they didn't grasp it? Or do you think that the people who need the people who are getting it now are outweighing the people that don't get it?
I think it's somewhere, I mean, everybody talks 100th monkey or whatever it may be, critical mass. I've never felt, people ask me, wouldn't I love to be alive 2,000 years ago? And I'm like, this is where I want to be right now. I'm amazed at how all these texts say that there's going to be a time when humanity is ready to receive these teachings, and all of a sudden the codes will be unlocked, the box will be opened, and you're going to be able to see things that you couldn't see before. And the thing that floors me about that is, in a way, that sounds kind of kitschy and stuff, almost like a freaking Bible movie thing, but it's exactly what's happening. It's like we had to have a certain modicum of like scientific understanding and psychology and psychotherapy and like the work of Carl Jung or Joseph Campbell to understand archetype and myth. And it was like we had to get to a certain ripeness or a sweet spot. And what's amazing is that in Hebrew, there's four levels of translation. It's Peshat, Remez, Darash, and Sod. It'll get a little stuffy on the radio, but those four levels or deepening layers of translation spell out the word pardes, which was the root that created the word paradise. Now, the deepest level is called sod. Sod means secret in Hebrew. Now, secret in that sense doesn't mean secret as in, you know, you're not allowed to see it, secret societies off in the corner, off in another room, special building, special group, whatever. What secret means in that sense is that here is something that you've looked at 100,000 times. It's been right here in front of your face, but you've never seen its true nature. You've only ever seen the code of your beliefs that you project upon it. So rather than you actually having a direct experience of what's there, it took 2,000 years for us to really understand what a lot of these texts were saying. According to what was written, even the disciples didn't understand it. We know many of the biblical or church people didn't understand it. We know that a lot of the popes didn't understand it. And it almost took, it's like it took this moment, this right moment in time for us to even be able to have, to even be able to comprehend even a small sliver of it. And if I was doing this back in the 50s, I would already be dead, and it would have been an accident because somebody would have rubbed me out and, oops, sorry, we didn't see him. But that can't happen anymore thanks to the internet, thanks to everybody being so connected around this planet. It's like we're in that sweet spot, and you can feel it. You can almost breathe it or taste it in the air right now, you know? So,
all right. Well, we have about a minute and a half before our next break. What are some things that the character of Jesus says are wrong? Do not do this.
Well, to me, the almost like the essential core of it is to not take things at face value, or should I say, you know, he would talk about wolves, or he would talk about different kinds of how we tend to perceive things, and we're not seeing what's actually there. It's almost like reading Carlos Castaneda with Don Juan and this Yaqui sorcerer, and how Carlos would be seeing things that weren't actually there. It's like Yeshua, it seems like there's this thing just within the biblical, the four canonical gospels, there's this message that's constantly saying, pull back, find it inside of yourself. Stop letting your mind trick you into what you're seeing, because realize that, and again, it works in with the St. Francis line, what you're looking for is what is looking. It's the opposite of what it's turned into today. So,
Okay, when we come back from this break, I will ask Dale how that, given his insight of the ancient language, languages, he would compare the tone of the Old Testament to the New Testament. It's one of those, you know, well, it's a debate that is so big of a rift, it's created essentially different religions. I'm Joshua P. Warren. My guest is Dale Allen Hoffman, and tonight's show is brought to you by Wright's Coin Shop. You're listening to Speaking of Strange. Speaking of Strange, our website is speakingofstrange.com. Tonight's show is presented to you by Wright's Coin Shop. The number to Wright's is 828-298-5402. My guest this hour is Dale Allen Hoffman. And by the way, I want you all to know that if you go to speakingofstrange.com, we are going to have a link there directly to Dale's store, where you can download all kinds of instant recordings and similar material from presentations he's given, including the one that I consider my current favorite one. I haven't listened to all of them. Inanna, Living from the I Am. And amazingly, and truly this is amazing, Dale and I have been friends for so long that he has agreed to offer you a 40% discount on anything from his store if you go there and enter the coupon code SOS2015JPWarren. Again, that's SOS2015JPWarren. We'll have that information for you at speakingofstrange.com. Already, I have talked about him offering this through my e-newsletter and Facebook and Twitter. And is there anything else that you want to tell people before we move on in our discussion about this, Dale?
Not necessarily, except that, I mean, that's a real pure 40% off. I didn't go and raise my prices and then shave it off. I mean, that's real 40%. So, I mean, it's awesome. Just the message you sent out last week, we got orders from literally all over the world. I think, what, 5 different continents. So, beautiful.
That is a good feeling, isn't it, to know that people all over the world can now come together and share in these ideas instantly. It's fantastic. Well, you know, at last hour, I was having this conversation with Sam because there was a woman in North Carolina charged with a crime, and she told the cops, essentially, you know, God was speaking to me because, you know, I was hearing these voices. It was God, or could have been aliens. I'm not exactly sure who was talking to me. Could it be God or aliens? And so this led me to ask Sam, Sam, if you and I were sitting at a bar and the guy next to us says, hi, guys, I'm Jesus. The Jesus? Yes, the Jesus. I told everybody I was going to come back. I'm back, and I wanted to come say hi to you guys, you know, before I go out and do my press release. And we're thinking, is this guy nuts, or is he some kind of con man, or is he a magician? If you were at that bar and this guy says to you, I'm Jesus, what would you, Dale Allen Hoffman, ask him to do to prove to you that he is the guy you've been reading about all these years?
You know, I don't know what I would ask him, but what I do know is I know the feeling I would have, and I would, like as an example, if someone comes up and asks me a question on the street, I have no canned phrases I give, yet I know what it feels like for me to kind of retreat back to that eye within the eye by just paying attention to my breath and allowing myself to become very still. And I know that by just doing that, whatever needs to be asked, or maybe nothing needs to be asked, I don't know, I would know in that moment. You know, I don't think I would really sort of pre-think out something. And I know I've thought about things like this before, not thinking necessarily that it was going to happen, but just kind of trying to find my own biases within myself. I know how I would feel, you know, to a certain extent. And let me put it this way, too. I've met Mary Magdalene about 4 dozen times out on the road, people saying they were Mary Magdalene in a past life, some in this life. I've met a couple of dozen Jesuses. I've been, you know, referred to several dozen Jesuses by other people. I've been looked at, and I've had people tell me I was John the Baptist or Jesus. Jesus especially. Every once in a while, someone will come up at one of my events, and they'll be like, I know who you are. And I'm like, okay, good, thanks. That's good that you know who I am. And then they'll send me an email a couple of days later saying that they know I'm Yeshua. And I'm like, you know what? To me, that's all bells and whistles in terms of that. My focus is just – it's almost like my focus is on unfocusing or allowing myself to be in some sort of kind of interference pattern so that I can be open. And I think that if that situation did happen and I was right there in front of them, I think I'd probably feel or sense, you know, the reality of the situation better than any words I'd be able to hear him say. But I'd probably have a few things I might ask. I just don't know what those are. So
yeah. Oh, I understand. It's a tough one. Okay, well, given what you know about going back, looking at the earliest sources and trying to get the most valid interpretations and translations, tell us how you compare the tone of the Old Testament to that of the New Testament.
Well, it's completely different. It depends on where we are in the Old Testament, where we are in the New Testament as well. But the first five books, the Pentateuch, the Torah, tends to, especially Genesis. Genesis to me is like a mathematical algorithm, especially that first chapter. Something very open, flowing, and almost stream of consciousness like about that. And I don't really mean in the story, but more when you break it down in Hebrew and you're looking at it on a much deeper level. I will say this, it's not the same God, and I put God in quotes, in the Old Testament and the New Testament. The old God, of course, Elohim, which means one and many, it's definitely more of a power person dynamic, such that we're definitely clearly talking about something outside. And, I mean, of course, you've got giants, you've got all kinds of bizarro incest things and, like, gang rape of, you know, daughters gang raping the father and all that fun stuff. The New Testament seems to be almost like there was an attempt to somehow make it really clean and keep it really clean. And I'll say that in the Yeshua teachings, that God idea, at least in Aramaic and to a certain extent in Greek, was definitely much more universal, not in the New Age sense, but all-inclusive. Sort of like that one great reality. And then you start moving into Paul's letters, at least about a third of which are forgeries, which is not anything new in any way, shape, or form. If people just go looking, you can see the ones that, as an example, Irenaeus, who was called a saint by the Catholic Church, Saint Irenaeus, was scripting a lot of letters to add to Paul's so that he could make Jesus the only begotten, which of course was Egyptian, Horus, etc., and put a lot of tones in there that weren't in there already. It was Irenaeus who retitled the Gospel of the Beloved Disciple, which was about a woman, retitled that to the Gospel of John because he remembered a friend of his father said that John was the Beloved Disciple, so they regendered it from female into male. It's such a mess just in terms of translation, but just between the tone of the old and the new. There's so much more of an intense violence in the Old Testament. But then, of course, you've got Psalms and Proverbs at the end, nice hunky-dory. And the other thing about the OT really feels very a little bit more disjointed, felt like it was kind of pulling from sources that from so many different sources trying to make it line up but really didn't do as good of a job as they did with the New Testament. Not that the New Testament lines up perfectly, but yeah, and of course, you know, the New Testament is all about Jesus. So
sure.
In the Old Testament, you've got prophet after prophet after prophet. So.
Okay, we have a couple minutes before our next break. So let me ask you this, going back, I guess, to this idea of, you know, kind of like if we met Jesus or what he was presenting to us. Ultimately, what do you think was more important? The message or the magic tricks? And I know that will offend certain people if I call these miracles magic tricks, but I mean literally, you know, water into wine, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, how would you compare the significance of these two factors associated with this figure?
Well, that's kind of a two-part question for me. The first is, oh my God, I'm so freaking offended. The first part is that for me, it would be more about the integration of the message, I would say, more the message. But the other thing about the magic tricks is that these magic tricks that Yeshua supposedly did are the same magic tricks that Apollonius of Tyana and dozens of other solar messiahs had done, not only in that century, but thousands of years prior. Walking on water, healing the sick, raise the dead, water into wine. These are very common in so many different archetypes and so many different myths. Who's to say that he actually did them? And I will say, like as an example, one of the things I hear is people say if he wasn't resurrected from the cross, then we wouldn't be talking about him today and it wouldn't matter. And I'm like, well, do you have any idea of how many people were supposedly resurrected from the cross? Jesus just happens to be the most recent one, and it happens to be the one that people picked up and it stuck. So I would definitely say the message. The tricks are neat, but honestly, I'll be just flat blunt with you that I doubt that many of those even happen. So,
yeah. Well, you know, it kind of reminds me of the Jefferson Bible. And for those listening who don't know what that is, it was a portion of the New Testament that Thomas Jefferson, toward the end of his life, made a mission of sitting down with a razor blade and paper and literally editing into a version that did not include the miraculous stuff. It just focused on things that really could happen to anybody and sort of treated, you know, the message as the important thing. We're going to take a break. When we come back, I'll wrap up this conversation with Dale Allen Hoffman, and I'm just going to, you know, give him the floor and say, hey, Dale, you know, tell us what is the gist of everything that you've learned? I mean, what do you want everybody to know is important about what you can get by putting all this effort into learning the real accurate translations of the Bible? His name is Dale Allen Hoffman. His website is linked up at speakingofstrange.com. This program is brought to you by Wright's Coin Shop, and Speaking of Strange will be right back.
Overseas with Kajabi MC and the Rock. I came to see the mommies in the spot. On the count of three, drop your body like it's hot. One, young, two, you, one, two. two, three, young hoes, a snake charmer. Move your body like a snake, mama. Make me wanna put the snake on ya. I'm on my eighth summer. Still hot, young's the eighth wonder. All I do is get bread, yeah, I take wonder. I take one of your chicks straight from under your armpit. The black Brad Pitt, I'm at till 6 in the a.m. All day I'm P-I-M-P. I am simply attached to the track like Symphony. It's simply good, young hoe, infinitely hood.
In the final minutes of hour number two on tonight's Speaking of Strange, brought to you by Wright's Coin Shop. And next hour, well, that's what we call the Dark 30 Hour. And that's when we dig into some of the more outrageous and controversial news, not for the kiddies, not for the easily offended. We call this the show that explores the very summit of mankind's enlightenment and then the pit of his depravity. And I think we've gotten once again pretty close to the summit of something enlightening, but next hour, well, we're going to get down into that pit, I assure you. I'm talking with Dale Allen Hoffman. You can go directly to his site, DaleAllenHoffman.com, or you can go to SpeakingOfStrange.com to find a link. And also, there will be a link at SpeakingOfStrange.com directly to his store, and I implore you to go there and buy great content that, I mean, we are just barely grazing the surface in this interview, I promise you. One of my favorites, Inanna, Living from the I Am. And if you go there through this link right now, okay, this is not going to last forever, you go there right now, you can get a 40% discount. Let me repeat that, 40% off of the prices. And he hadn't jacked his prices up 40% for this. This is a real discount if you put in this coupon code, SOS2015JPWarren. All the letters are lowercase. I'll have the info for you at speakingofstrange.com this next week. SOS2015JPWarren for a 40% discount. So, Dale, as we wrap up here, let me just ask you, we have about, you know, 4 minutes. First off, feel free to tell us if you have anything coming up, anything that you want to promote, any place where people can see you. It's a shame we didn't even get into the water ritual stuff. This hour has flown by. But additionally, tell us sort of, you know, after all these years of studying, what is the most condensed message that you have found that needs to be passed along, and what do we need to know, those of us who don't know Aramaic?
Well, I'll hit the promo type thing first just to get it out of the way. I definitely encourage people, go to my website and click on videos. There's just free content and videos. And go to my YouTube page and watch the videos. It's the greatest tool that I have, really, in getting people around the world to get at least a better idea of what I do. And then also sign up on my email list, because that's going to hook them in with not only what I'm doing, but like special promotions, free downloads, my schedule, everything is in there. Recommend other people's things very, very, very rarely. But if there's something that I think, wow, people have to hear about this, I'll let people hear about that. You know, in terms of what it really boils down to for me, it's more than anything else. You know, Joshua, you and I had a conversation about this on the phone a couple of weeks ago. It really boils down to staying open, to use the knowledge, study, keep studying, keep reading, keep figuring out, but be able to not be so obsessed about the details that you can't see the bigger picture. Because the funny thing about, as an example, the Yeshua teachings, I'm not out there telling people, look, this is definitely what it really says. What I'm actually telling people is, look, this is what it says in Aramaic. This is what it says in Greek. Maybe we've got some Coptic here and some Hebrew over there. There's Latin here. There's English there. And I'm laying these next to each other, and I'm telling people, look, this is the difference between these. But understand, we don't know who wrote this. We truly don't know where it came from. We don't know who wrote the books of the Bible. We don't know, with a capital K, any of it. We really don't. But if we just keep ourselves open and we can look at it with almost like a balance between heart and science, you know, a balance between spirit and reason, however you want to put it, to be able to look and see what's actually there without shading it with our belief systems. And that's the most difficult thing that I've learned over the years. I've noticed that as soon as I say read some particular book that has a particular viewpoint about this or that, it doesn't even have to be about Yeshua, and I feel, oh, well, that was such a convincing viewpoint, then that's my new belief here. And then all of a sudden, everything else I'm looking at gets pulled into the matrix or into the frame or the fence of that belief system. And it's the one thing more than anything else that I would really would get across to people is what you're looking for is what is looking. This isn't, there's not a key out there that you have to find that somehow is going to fit your own door. Your door is going to be open if you're open, if you stay open. You're not vulnerable to some kind of weird energies or something like that. But just stay open and keep investigating. Like I said, I read books from atheists. I wrote a great book this year. I think it was called Imagine There's No Heaven. Great book, which was written by an atheist. I go on atheist websites because it shows me where my biases are. That's the one thing that's happened with modern fundamentalist, evangelical, charismania Christianity. I'm the last person they would want to hear. They don't want to hear anything that's accurate. They only want to hear what fits within their belief systems. And the reason that is number one, because they're told to only allow in what fits into that belief system that they were fed. That's the BS. And also, as soon as that belief system starts rocking and the fences start rocking of whatever it is that you've bought into, when a catalyst like myself or whoever it may be, the movie Zeitgeist or something like that pops up, and this catalyst, when that person pops up or that catalyst pops up, you're going to start feeling like you're dying. You're going to start suffering because you're more addicted to your beliefs than you are to actually finding the truth. And truth is a direct experience. I remember another thing you said in Pet Ghost. You said thoughts are like bullets. You know, it's as real as a bullet. And it's true. Huh? Thoughts are things. Thoughts are physical. And when we get overly obsessive about what we're thinking, we miss that sensing part that's so much deeper. And I'm just telling people,
all right, Dale,
stay open.
Good, my friend. The clock has got us. Thank you so much. Speaking of strange, we'll be right back.